Okay, good morning. So let's continue. We left off in the middle of the Ma'ayanos. So if you remember, again, just a quick review from what we covered. I apologize about the missed class last week, but we'll pick up really where we left off the previous week. So if you remember, again, we spoke about the Ma'ayanos. So just a quick chazara. So in number one on your sheet, we had the Ma'ayanos, the wellsprings, quoting the pasuk from Tehillim. Visarim, or Visharim, I should say, Kecholalim, Kol Ma'ayanai Bach. Literally, again, translated as, and singers as well as flute players, all my innards are concerned with you. So if you remember, again, we spoke about the symbolism of the wellspring constantly flowing. We constantly recite Shira. And then we spent a significant amount of time speaking about the concept of Shira. So if you remember, again, we started with the story of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu left all alone, struggles with the Sarah Shal Esav, that Ish, that mysterious man, the entire night. The Ish finally tells Yaakov to let him go. Why? What does he have to do? He has to sing Shira. So we dealt with the fundamental question as to why now? Why does Shira have to be sung now? So remember, again, we saw the Magid of Kozhnitz, the Avodas Yisrael, who said ultimately, again, when is Shira sung? When is Shira sung? When there's accomplishment, right? When there's accomplishment, ultimately, again, when the Malach accomplishes something. So the Kozhnitz and Magid understood that the Sarosh Shel Esav was this force that was acting against Yaakov Avinu, not in order to defeat Yaakov Avinu, but rather in order to what? Strengthen him. Right? To allow Yaakov Avinu, the goal ultimately was that Yaakov Avinu should be successful, overcome his nisayon, overcome his challenge, and ultimately go ahead and stand strong. That was the goal of the Sarosh Shel Esav. When the Sarosh Shel Esav is able to accomplish that, then at the end of the day, he has the great zuchos to go ahead and sing Shira. The Kozhnitz or Magid then went on and explained that it's not just the Sarosh Shel Esav, but indeed the entire concept of a Yetzirah. We often think that the goal of the Yetzirah is to defeat us, is to vanquish us, is to conquer us. But in fact, that's not true. Says the Kozhnitz or Magid, the entire goal of the Yetzirah is to put struggle at our doorstep. But more than we want to be successful, the Yetzirah wants us to be successful. Amazing dynamic. That our success is the Yetzirah's success. When we're able to repel its advances, when we're able to stand strong, when we're able to go ahead and just simply desist from the negative behaviors which hold us back, not only are we successful, but the Yetzirah shares in that success as well. So now that we have that construct, what I'd like to try to do is as follows. So in the Kozhnitz or Magid's model, Yaakov Avinu spent an entire night locked in struggle with the Yetzer Hara. What doesn't the Magid tell us? What's missing from the Avodas Yisrael's explanation of this story? What would you say? I know the Yaakov Avinu struggled. What don't I know? What he struggled with. What was the struggle? In other words, that if you go with the Avodas Yisrael's idea that this struggle of Yaakov Avinu with the Ish, with the mysterious man, is some type of is representative of a struggle with the Yetzer Hara. So what is it that Yaakov Avinu is struggling with? What's the Yetzer Hara that he is combating? Of course, maybe you could say it's just general Yetzer Hara. We all have our Yetzer Hara. We all have our things. Our predispositions or our proclivities that we battle with. But then perhaps there's something deeper. Yaakov Avinu was struggling with something a bit more specific. So I'll show you something amazing. If you take a look at number six, so the Rashbam on this pasuk, the Rashbam is Rashi's grandson. So the Rashbam says something quite dramatic. The Rashbam writes, and he explains, Vayivaser Yaakov Levado. Yaakov Avinu was left alone. So the Rashbam paints a very fascinating picture. He says, "Kilomar shehevir kala sherlo shelo haya od laavor elohu levado virotza laavor achareyem." So the Kozhnitz or Magid says like this: See, Yaakov Avinu is left all alone. Now, interestingly enough, we often assume what. Remember again, where are they crossing? The Yarden, Mavar Yabok, right? They're crossing over a narrow area of the Jordan River. So when we have this idea that they crossed and Yaakov Avinu went back, where is his family? on the other side. What other side? What's the other side? Eretz Yisrael. Right. So that's we normally assume Yaakov's family is in Canaan, and then Yaakov Avinu goes back. He crosses back over Ma'avar Yavok. Why does he cross over? So like Rashi, most of us are familiar with Rashi's idea, according to Gemara, Shachach Pachim Kitanim, he forgot some utensils, see, he goes back to retrieve that which he forgot. So the family is on the Canaan side, and ultimately again, Yaakov Avinu is now back on the, we'll call it Chutz La'aret side. The Rashbam understands something dramatically different. The Rashbam says that in fact they had all crossed over into the Canaan side, and then Yaakov Avinu takes the family back over Ma'avar Yabok to the Chutz La'aretz side of the Jordan River. When Huzla, everybody's crossed back over now. They're leaving Canaan. They can cross back over Canaan, and the only person left in Canaan is who? Is Yaakov. You'll say to yourself, but that doesn't make any sense. Yaakov just crossed them over before, over Ma'avar Yabok, from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Canaan, and now in the Rashbam's model, Yaakov crossed them back over Ma'avar Yabok. The entire family is in Chutz La'aretz. Yaakov himself is left alone in Canaan. Why does he do this? Look at number 6, second line. Kilivroach, excuse me, Kilivroach derech acheres, shalo yifgeshenu Esav niskavin. What does that phrase mean? I'm sorry?
To go
root the Esav 1 and 7, good. Look a little bit more, good, but be a little bit more precise. What does Yaakov Avinu do according to the Rashbam? There's one very important word there, which is? He's running away from Esav. Kilivroach. Kilivroach derech acheres, shalo yifkeshenu Esav niskavin. According to the Rashbam, there is a dramatic shift that is occurring over here. Up until now, Yaakov Avinu has been preparing for an encounter with Esav. Remember again, as we saw, he's preparing in three different ways, right? What is he preparing for? Number one, right, sending gifts. Number two, Milchama. And number three, Tefillah. Right, so Yaakov Avinu's entire mindset was is going to be an encounter. Says the Rashbam, the night before the fated encounter was to occur, Yaakov Avinu has a change of heart. Says, you know what? No, not going to meet Esav. Instead, you know what we're going to do? We're going to run away. We're going to run away. There is no need for this encounter. I don't want to do this. I don't want to subject the family to this. I'm going to run away. So what does he do according to the Rashbam? He literally crosses the family back over Ma'avar Yabok. Right? He crosses them back over in an effort that they're going to run. Where are they going to run? I don't know wherever they're going to run. But the goal is not to encounter Esav. That is the goal. There is not going to be an encounter. We're going to avoid conflict. We are going to run. So says the Rashbam, so what happens? The entire family is crossed over on the other side of the Yarden. Yaakov Avinu is left all alone in Canaan. And what occurs? The fight. Vayeavek ish imo. Look at the last line of number 6. Writes the Rashbam, Maloch imo shalo yuchal livroach. The Maloch fights with Yaakov Avinu the entire night. Why? To prevent Yaakov Avinu from running away. The Rashbam's understanding of this story is dramatically different than everyone else's understanding. Everyone else understands that Yaakov Avinu goes back. Again, the family's in Canaan. Yaakov Avinu crosses back over Ma'avar Yabok. He forgot stuff. That's the classic understanding. The Rashbam says, no, everybody was in Canaan. Yaakov crosses them back out of Canaan. He's left all alone in Canaan. He crossed them back because they're not encountering Esav. Change of plans. By the way, what's the most incredible raya to the Rashbam? The most incredible proof to the Rashbam that Yaakov Avinu has a change of plans? When Yaakov Avinu was preparing to meet Esav, what's his plan? What's his plan for the family? What does he do? He splits. Now, if you notice, does Yaakov Avinu actually ever split the camps?
No.
No, it's fascinating. If you look at the psukim, he says that he's going to split the camps, but he never actually does. He never actually does. Now we're going to see that play out a little bit more in the story. That's because he has a change of heart. He has a change of heart, says the Rashbam. Splitting of the camps was the plan that Yaakov Avinu had forged for the engagement with Esav. If someone has to die, at least then everybody dies, somebody will survive. But then he changes the plans. We're not going to meet Esav. Instead, we're running. And in the Rashbam's model, why does the Ish fight with Yaakov Avinu the entire night? Why does he fight the entire night? To prevent what? Yaakov Avinu from running. See, according to the Rashbam, something amazing happens. The Malach keeps Yaakov Avinu busy the entire night, fighting the entire night. When does the fight end? What then does the fight end? Alos HaShachar, in the dawn. And pretty much as soon as the fight ends, what does Yaakov Avinu see? Esav approaching. So according to the Rashbam, the Malach keeps Yaakov Avinu from fleeing the entire night. And by the time the fight ends, there is no running from Esav. He must engage. He must confront. So there's something profoundly amazing happening over here. If you take a look at number 7, Rabbi Soloveitchik has a fascinating... It's really based on this Rashbam. It's not a chiddush. It's just an expanding on the Rashbam. Look at number 7. The Rav explained that in the end, Yaakov never divides the camp because the Malach delayed him, so he didn't have time. This is why... Vayisa Einov Vihine Esav. He lifted his eyes and Esav was upon him. The reason Hashem sent the Malach was because it wasn't proper what Yaakov planned to do. Al Pidin. It is not right to sacrifice one machana so that the other may live. Now the truth is we have to build on this because it's not even so clear that that's not necessarily true. Meaning there are times in Halacha where ultimately again, you sacrifice the needs of the individuals for the sake of the collective. We have examples of that in Halacha. But leaving that last piece aside, what Rabbi Soloveitchik is highlighting is exactly what Rashbam was saying, namely, Yaakov Avinu wanted to run. The goal of the Malach was to prevent him from running. If I were to ask you to give me a description of Yaakov Avinu's personality, how would you describe Yaakov Avinu? Cautious, good. How else would you describe Yaakov Avinu? How does the Torah describe him? Ishtam. Now, what does it mean, tam? Right? What does it mean you say ishtam? So, when we think about tam, sometimes you think about the Arba Banim in the Haggadah. Right? So, who's the tam in the Haggadah? The simple son, right? So, it doesn't seem like an incredible descriptive. So, what does it mean Yaakov Avinu is an ishtam? So, it could be cautious. It could be what else? Yaakov Avinu is conflict averse. Yaakov Avinu would sooner go ahead and move out of the way than to engage in conflict. Right? Think about this. Think throughout Yaakov Avinu's life. What happens? Let's go back to the beginning. Right? Yaakov and Esav. Right? Yaakov purchases... You know, let me go back. When we have the whole story of Yaakov Avinu masquerading as Esav, going in and stealing the brachos from his father, there was a much simpler solution to this issue. When Yitzchak wanted to bless Esav, what should Yaakov have done?
Told him
what? About the birthday. Dad, right? Dad, you're wrong. I'm sorry. I'll say it more respectfully. You might be incorrect. I bought the birthright from Esav. There's no need for the masquerade. There's no need to dress up as his brother. There's no need to deceive his father. It's a very simple cheshbon. Esav sold the bechora. He sold the birthright. So go in, tell your father what happened, and shalom al Yisrael. Why doesn't he do that? Why doesn't he do that? That's fine, but why doesn't he do it? Because at the end of the day, Yaakov Avinu doesn't want to engage in conflict. At the end of the day, Yaakov Avinu would sooner go ahead and dress up as his brother, right? Go in on the pretense as well. Yes, of course, it's true that Rivka Avinu told him to do this also. But at the end of the day, before Rivka tells him to dress up as Esav, Yaakov could have said, Mom, there's no need for this. There's no need for this. I bought the Bechora. I am entitled to these brachos, fair and square. I purchased it. We don't need to go through this whole charade. But Yaakov Avinu doesn't want to do that. Because to do that, we'd be engaging in conflict potentially with his father and potentially with his brother. So instead, he takes the path of lesser resistance by dressing up as Esav. When the whole thing becomes discovered, and Rivka tells Yaakov that your brother's ready to kill you, again, what could Yaakov have done? What could he have done?
Fall back.
Right? You're Yaakov. Go, Esav, you're angry at me? A chutzpah. A chutzpah. You sold me the birthright, and then after selling me the birthright, you were going to go into dad and claim him for yourself. You're a Rasha and you're a Ganif. Meaning, there's such an easy retort over here. Yet, what does Yaakov Avinu do? What does he do? He runs away. He runs away. He simply runs away to Laban. That's it. Fast forward. Yes?
It seems like you're causing more conflict to be dressing up and deceiving him.
Oh, excellent. Hold on 1 second. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Hold on. Hold on for 1 second. Fast forward. He's at Laban's house. He's at Laban's house. Right? He works for Laban for a number of years. Over 20 years. He calls out Rachel and Leah. He says, we're going back to Canaan. What does he tell Laban? What does he tell Laban? What?
Nothing.
Nothing. Instead, how does he leave Laban's house? The truth is, it's not totally fair. He tells Laban, it's time for me to go back. It's time for me to establish my family. That's where, again, he takes his payment. But what doesn't he tell Laban? When he's actually leaving. He doesn't tell Laban when he's leaving. In fact, the pasuk says, "Vayignov his slave Laban." He snuck away under the cover of darkness. He gathered up his wives. He gathered up his family, and at the end of the day, he snuck away. That's why, amazingly enough, when Laban catches up to him, you know, Laban acts like the victim, right? What does Laban say to Yaakov? What does he say to Yaakov? You stole my family, kishvuyim, like captives. Why did you do that? Why would he? You lived with me for 21 years. These are my daughters. These are my grandchildren. You didn't let me say goodbye to my mishpacha. Why are you sneaking out under the cover of darkness? So it happens to be here that Yaakov Avinu does retort a little bit. But you begin to see a pattern of behavior. It's not, Yaakov Avinu is not chas v'shalom a coward. He's not a coward. Yaakov Avinu is conflict averse. Yaakov Avinu makes the conscious decision that I'm not going to engage in conflict. It's not that I'm scared. I'm not going to engage in conflict. I'd rather take the longer way out. So I'd rather dress up as Esav. I'd rather not tell my father that I bought the Bechora. I'd rather run away to Lavan's house. I'd rather run away from Lavan. I don't want to engage in conflict. By the way, is that a good midah or a bad midah? Well said, right? So with Pashtus, avoiding conflict is wonderful. Fantastic. Avoidance of conflict is beautiful. But watch this. Take a look at number 11. So the Mishnah Maseches Abba says, Ben Zoma Omer, Ezehu Gibor HaKovesh Es Yitzro. So Ben Zoma says, who is strong? One who is able to rein in. Now, when we say Yitzro, what does Yitzro mean? What do we normally assume it refers to? Your Yitzhara. Right? Normally we assume that Ben Zoma is saying that the greatest demonstration of strength is not your physical prowess, it's not your physical strength, but rather it's your ability to rein in on your Yetzer Hara. All of us have desires, wants, proclivities, different things. To rein that in, to overcome your desires, that's the greatest display of strength. But I'll show you something amazing. So the Tosfos Yomtiv points out over here, he says, you're at Kavesh Es Yisro, Yetzer Hara, it's your Yetzer Hara. Then he says something else, take a look at number 13. Va'ud Perish, Shehu Yitzro, Hamiyuchad Lo. You see, what the Tosfos Yomtiv is bothered by is the following. If the Mishnah really meant the Yetzer Hara, then what should the Mishnah have said? Ezu Gibar, HaKovesh Es Yetzer Hara. Say it. Say it. Say your Yetzara. So the Tosfos Yomtiv says something amazing. He says Yitzro does not mean your Yetzara. Rather, it's Yitzro Hamiyuchad Lo. What does it mean? Yitzro Hamiyuchad Lo? Your Yetzara that is a part of you. Meaning what? Each of us are born with innate qualities, behaviors, and dispositions. They are neither good nor bad. What determines the nature of these predispositions and behaviors is what? How you use them. So says the Tosfos Yomtiv something amazing. Every person has a natural predisposition, natural innate qualities and character traits. And in life, you have to be careful to utilize them in the right way and not chas v'shalom allow them to get the best of you. Ezehu gibor, who is strong, hakovesh es yitzro. When you identify the yitzer, you have, all of us have a yitzer. It's not a yitzer tov, it's not a yitzer ra. It just is a yitzer. We are all born with certain predispositions, certain behaviors, certain netios. And so the shaila becomes, how do you use it? The greatest example of this, Esav, right? Esav was born how? How does the Torah describe him? Edomi. So again, why was he born Edomi? What does it foreshadow? Shedding of blood. Who else was born Edomi? David HaMelech. Right, so you see something, it's the same midah. David and Esav have the same exact midah. So where lies the difference between an Esav and a David? What's the difference? How they channel that midah. Ezehu gibor, hakovesh es yitzro. Right, at the end of the day, the difference between the righteous and the wicked, it's not the pshat that the righteous person is born with more righteousness, is born with inner tzidkus, and the Russia is born a Russia. That's not the pshat at all. The only difference between a tzaddik and a Russia could be born with the very same midos. The difference is what makes the tzaddik a tzaddik, is that he is a gibor, hakovesh es yisro. David HaMelech was also born with a proclivity or predisposition for bloodshed. He just chooses to channel it in a different way. He chooses to channel it ultimately to go ahead and wage wars for Am Yisrael. Esav chooses not to channel that bloodlust, and it becomes a source of incredible destructiveness. So says Ben Zoma, that's the entire Yisod of life. Ezehu Gibor, Hakovesh Es Yisrael. If you want to be strong in life, you have to rein in your predispositions, your proclivities. So now watch this. What's Yaakov Avinu's Yetzer? What's his Yetzer? To avoid conflict. Is that a good Yetzer or a bad Yetzer? So it depends how you use it. So now what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to tell Yaakov is that it's beautiful to avoid conflict, right? Yes, absolutely. It is so much better to avoid conflict in life. However, there are times in life when you must confront your conflict, when you must stand your ground, and you must face your demons. You can't run away from conflict forever. There's a time to be conflict averse, there's a time to avoid conflict, and there is a time to stand your ground, fight your battles, and face your demons. Yaakov HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you have been running your entire life. From the time that you were a boy and you bought the Bechorah from Esav, you didn't stand your ground. Instead, when conflict arose, you ran. And again, that is admirable at times. But now, Yaakov Avinu, is your opportunity, together with your mishpacha, to face your brother, to confront your demons, to confront Esav, and to stand your ground, and not to run. Yaakov Avinu, says the Rashbam, like we saw before, was ready to run. Why should I have conflict in my life? I've avoided my brother for 20 plus years. I can avoid him for another 50 years. We travel in different circles. We live in different parts of the world. It's not going to be a big deal. There's no need for me to engage in this conflict. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Yaakov Avinu, I will not let you run. This time, you must face your demons. This time, you must face your conflict. This time, the need of conflict, being conflict averse or having conflict aversion, is no longer a good midah. For you, Yaakov Avinu, this has become a handicap. Now watch this. Take a look at number 14. I'll show you something amazing. Actually, go a little bit out of order. So remember again, what does the pasuk say? Look at number 15. Vayizrachel, this is at the end, this is at the end of the battles. Remember again, Yaakov Avinu was fighting with the Malach the entire night. According to this approach, what's the job of the Malach? It's a very simple job. What's the job? To keep him in place. Right? The Malach doesn't have to beat Yaakov. That's not his job. What's the Malach's job? To keep Yaakov in place so that Yaakov Avinu cannot run away. That's the goal. But I'll tell you something amazing. So remember again, the Malach is unable to hurt Yaakov, is unable to beat Yaakov. But what does he do to Yaakov? He injures him. Where does he injure him? In the thigh. Look at number 15. Vayizrach lo Hashemesh kasher avar es Penuel v'utzolea al yirecho. So remember again, the Malach is able to injure Yaakov Avinu in the thigh. Specifically again, we spoke about the last class, the sciatic nerve. The sciatic nerve. What's the chap with the sciatic nerve when you go out and you injure the sciatic nerve? What can't you do? You can't run. You can't run. The injury was a specific injury. It wasn't a haphazard injury. Right? You read the psukim and you think, okay, this is where the Malach was able to grab Yaakov by the thigh and injure him there. That's just where he happened. That was Yaakov in his vulnerability. No, no, no. That was not a haphazard injury. That was a methodical, pre-planned, predetermined injury. The Malach wanted to dafka harm Yaakov in the thigh. Wanted to harm him in the gid hanosha, in the sciatic nerve. Because why he wanted to injure Yaakov in a way that Yaakov could not run. How does Yaakov Avinu emerge from this fight with the Malach? V'hut solea al yirecho. He's limping. He's limping. And what happens? Look at number still number 15. Al kein lo yochlu bnei Yisrael es gid hanasha asher akaf hayarech ad hayom azeh ki noga bekaf yerech Yaakov begid hanasha. An amazing halacha. We don't eat gid hanasha to this very day. Why don't we eat gid hanasha? Why not? Because again, strange halacha, no? Right? Meaning, I don't eat the gid hanasha of an animal because the gid hanasha of Yaakov Avinu was injured. The truth is, this mitzvah in general is fraught with so many complications because in general, we don't learn out halacha from anything that occurred before Matan Torah. And yet, amazingly enough, we learn the halacha of gid hanasha over here. What's the musra of gid hanasha? The musra of gid hanasha is don't run from your challenges. It's okay to be conflict diverse in life. It's good to be conflict diverse. You know, there are some people who are willing to fight for anything and everything. Everything is a machlokes. Everything is standing their ground. Everything is a war. It is much better in life, ultimately, to be conflict diverse, to not want to have conflict, but to be wise enough to know when you have to fight, when you have to stand your ground, and when you have to face your demons. We don't eat the gid hanosha in order to be remembered of this incredible lesson. Be conflict averse, because being conflict averse is a good midah, but you can't run all of the time. Figure out in life when you have to fight your battles, fight your wars, stand your ground, stare down your demons. And if I go back now to number 14, what does Yaakov Avinu say at the end of this entire story? So remember again, he is no longer able to run. He's no longer able to run. Vayikra Yaakov Shem Hamakom Peniel. Yaakov, you know, called this place where he has the struggle with the Malach Peniel. Kira isi alukim panim el panim vatinatzel nafshi. I saw God face to face, or I saw Malach face to face, vatinatzel nafshi, and my soul was saved. So my soul was saved. What does that mean? B'pashtos, it could very well mean the Malach could have killed me, but he didn't. I was given the strength to overcome him, but on a deeper level. What does it mean when Yaakov, you know, says that he was saved? What does that mean? What do you think he's saying? I was saved from what? I was saved from myself. Because had the Malach not fought with me, I would have what? I would have run away. And I probably would have spent the rest of my life running. But now that the Malach fought with me, vatinatzel nafshi. Ultimately, again, I have been saved. I've been saved from myself. I've been saved from a life of running. I've been saved from a life of flight. Instead of spending my life always running from my challenges, I now have realized that I have developed the courage to go ahead and stand my ground. And as Shlomo mentioned before, what Yaakov Avinu also realizes that sometimes in the effort to be conflict averse, we end up creating so much more conflict. Sometimes standing your ground, waging the battles, puts things to an end, as opposed to running, just simply perpetuates the problems more and more and more. Thus, Yaakov Avinu understands, so now we understand what's happening over here. Let's go back for just a moment. Right, the Malach says to Yaakov, let me go. Why does the Malach say to Yaakov, let me go in the morning? Why? What does the Malach have to do? Shira. When does the Malach sing Shira? only when it accomplishes its tachlis. And now we understand. What was the malach's tachlis in this particular situation? What was the tachlis? To prevent Yaakov from running. So when the sun comes up, and Yaakov Avinu can no longer run, because Esav is already too close, there's no fleeing, there's no escape, the malach says, Shalchini ki Allah amod ha-shachar. Let me go. My mission is accomplished. Yaakov, you spent the bulk of your life running from this challenge, from this conflict, from that conflict. My job was to keep you rooted in place, to injure you in the sciatic nerve, to prevent you from running, to teach you the important lesson that you cannot always run from the conflicts of life. Sometimes you must find a way ultimately to go ahead and engage, to go ahead and confront, to stand your ground, and to wage your battles. There is a time to be conflict averse. There is a time to avoid conflict, but there are also those times in life where you must wage battle, you must do war, you must engage in conflict, you must stand your ground, draw your line in the sand, and face down your demons. That's the story of Yaakov Avinu, that's the Gid HaNasha, and that's why the Malach recites Shira. To bring this full circle, go back now to number one. Perhaps that's what the wellsprings are teaching us. The wellsprings are telling us, Mayonos Omrin. What do the wellsprings say? Visharim kecholulim kol ma'ayonei bach. So remember again, so the Pasuk in Tehillim says, and singers as well as flute players, all my innards are concerned with you. So we saw the Medrash that said, that just as the water constantly flows through the wellspring, just as the water constantly flows through the ma'ayon, so too we are always engaged in singing Shira. There is always that capacity and ability to sing Shira. And perhaps the message is as follows. When do you sing Shira in life? When do you sing Shira? Right, remember again, let's go back. When does the Malach sing Shira? Yeah. When it accomplishes its task. When do you sing Shira? When do we sing Shira? When we accomplish something great in life. And the greatest accomplishment in life is a twofold accomplishment. It's Ezehu Gibra Kovesh Yisro. The greatest accomplishment is when you're able to go ahead and rein in your innate proclivities, predispositions, and character traits to make sure that they're not holding you back in life. We're all born with particular midos, and those midos could be used for good, those midos could be used for not so good. When you find the koach to rein in your midos, when you find the koach to rein in your innate behaviors and character traits, then ultimately, again, that is cause for Shira. And when you find the ability to confront your challenges, you know, we all run from challenges. All of us are running from something. Some of us are running from other people. Some of us are running from life circumstances. And most of us are running from ourselves. I know the true person I can be, and I know the person I am. And I'm often scared to really acknowledge the person I can be. Because if I acknowledge the person I can be, then what? Then suddenly again, I've raised the bar for myself dramatically. And most of us don't want to raise the bar. We're just happy floating. We're just happy coasting. We're just happy going through life and being mediocre and being okay. And as long as I'm better than that one and better than this one and a little bit better, I'm okay with that. I don't really want to acknowledge that I could be so much better than I am. Because suddenly, again, that creates a ridiculous level of expectations. But the moment we stop holding ourselves back, the moment ultimately, again, we're willing to confront our challenges, be they challenges in relationships we have, challenges in midos we have, challenges in circumstances we have. A lot of times we run away from things under the guise that I'm being conflict averse. But really, I'm just running because I'm scared. And if I find the courage to face down my demons, if I find the courage to really face my challenges, if I find the courage like Yaakov Avinu did, to stop running from my life Esav, and to confront my challenges in life, then that becomes the opportunity to sing Shira. You only sing Shira when you accomplish something great. And the greatest accomplishments in life are number one, the ability to rein in your Yetzer, and number two, the ability to confront your challenges. That's why the Ma'ayano says there are always challenges in life, and there are always inner yetzers that have to be conquered. Just as the Ma'ayan constantly fills with water, so too if we meet these challenges, we have the ability to sing perpetual Shira as well. We'll stop over here for today. Meretz Hashem, Wednesday we're going to do something Purim related, and then we'll continue our Perek Shira after Yom Tov.